So I remember our first little adventure in kind of remote management, and it's definitely not the way we do it now, but we had a woman that had been doing the laundry for several weeks for her stay, and we said, I won't mention her name, but she we said, hey, a few of the guests want to go do the snowshoeing thing. Do you want to come? She said, no, I'll stay here. And we said, well, if you're going to stay here, do you mind just running the hostel? I mean, you know, it makes sense. If you can do laundry, you should be able to run a hostel, right? I mean,
Hello, friends and travelers. Thanks for listening. You are riding along on the Hostel Road Trip Podcast. Our mission is to spread awareness of the true hostel experience in the Americas and share stories from the fascinating hosts who create those unique facilities. I'm your host, Jimmy Black, joined alongside co-founder of International Travelers House, Bobby Dyer. Each session, we sit down with hostel operators or travel influencers to hear about their road to success, discuss trending hostel topics, and close with tips for travelers who are seeking to have the ultimate experience when visiting each destination. You can't afford to miss this trip. Now fasten your seatbelts and let's hit the road.
Welcome back to the Hostel Road Trip Podcast, episode two of the day. We recorded with Dave Cook at the Barn Door Hostel in New Hampshire earlier today. And now we are with Jay Griggs, co-founder of the Bunk and Brew Hostel up in Oregon. And I'm with my business partner, Bobby Dyer, and co-founder of ITH Hostels. Thank you so much for joining us, gentlemen.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for coming on, Jay.
All right, rock on. So want to jump in more so, Jay, to, you know, your personal experience. I always love to start the episode with how you first came in contact with hostels personally. And I know that you've got a beautiful story of how, like, you and Frankie came together in a chance meeting of sorts through a soccer league.
But wow. Yeah, you remember?
Yeah. Yeah, I smoke a lot of weed, but I got a memory like an elephant. But I want to hear about your personal, like, when was your first exposure to hostels?
Yeah, you know, Frankie, he can tell his story, and he's been in the game, not in the game, but he's been aware of hostels much longer than me. For me, it was very late in life. He was traveling at a pretty young age. I didn't really leave the country until I was pretty much 30. So I kind of already had a career. I was a lawyer. I was doing this and that, working in an IT company. So what happened to me was I was in the Midwest. I didn't really love it out there. I'm more of a West Coast kid. And I said, well, I need to do something different. And I wasn't sure what. And I didn't find anything I liked on the West Coast. So I said, well, I made some money out here. Let's just try traveling, kind of get some exposure. So it was about 2016, I think. And I bought a truck down in LA, like a big black, like oversized tires, and I just drove south as far as I could go. And so I made it through every country till Panama. Wow. And I didn't really know what I would expect, but one of the things I discovered there was hostels. I just had no idea about this concept. And so I made it that far, ended up spending a few months in Cuba just to kind of finish things out, and then came back to the States. And I just thought I'd go back to lawyering. But instead, I just decided, let's try this hostel thing in the States. You know, there isn't a lot of them out there. I had a good time. Frankly, I was surprised there weren't more of them in the States, considering the experience that I had.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead, Bob.
When you're cruising through the, cruising south through Central America, what were some of the iconic hostels or most inspirational hostels that you found that you were like, whoa, really opened your eyes?
Oh yeah, there were a few. And let me tell you, you couldn't do what I did there in the States. So I knew my hostel would be somewhat limited, at least not legally, and down there, who knows what was legal or not. But God, I mean, I remember one morning waking up. I didn't even wake up. I was woken up by a couple of bros in furry suits with a beer bong at like 7 or 8 in the morning, basically commanding me to climb the roof of this hostel, take a beer shot, and jump into a pool from the roof. And that was like, whoa, this is, you know, and I was saying yes to everything back then, you know, I just wanted to experience. So I'm lucky I made it, like many of us. But yeah, that was a great experience. You know, there's some other cool ones too. They just had really inventive ideas. There was this one that was just a bunch of trampolines, and you would just kind of on an island, and you just you'd stay on this. The whole hostel was a wooden dock, kind of wow. on the edge of the land, and then you jump on trampolines into the water, and it was beautiful. You know, and Central America has some great settings. So there were some great ones. There were treehouse hostels, just all built in the trees. Mm. Yeah.
Awesome stuff. So you come back from that trip and find yourself in Bend, Oregon, right?
I actually came back to Portland first. You know, that Portland. Was kind of Bend was on the radar to me because everyone in Portland goes there. It's like the outdoor adventure hub of Oregon, right? But mm-hmm. at the time I really didn't have exposure. I just had heard about it.
Okay. Yeah. So you met Frankie when you were in Portland.
That's right.
Okay. So that's where you two hook up, and tell a little bit about how, like, you know, that's a very unique thing that you both met through the soccer league, through like a mutual friend that was like, I got a buddy who's trying to open a hostel.
Well, that's the weird thing, you know, it's not weird to meet interesting people through the things that you have passions about that are, you know, normal, commonplace things. But what's weird is when you find two people in a country that isn't doing that thing at all, and you run into each other. So when I first heard about it from our kind of the captain of the team, he just said, hey, there's this guy on the team that's also running or wants to start a hostel. You should talk to him. And I didn't believe it at first. They said he probably means a hotel or an Airbnb. Yeah. This guy doesn't know, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it turns out he did. And so, yeah, so we decided we would do it together.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, and I know from experience with Bob, it really is a much different experience, and for me, a much more enjoyable experience to have a partner in that process, especially if you can find someone that has a lot of the opposite strengths and that can counteract your weaknesses. Yeah. And I think that you and Frankie have a similar relationship and working relationship that Bobby and I have, and I can see the same benefits that you two have drawn off of each other in that way. So that's so cool. Now, tell us a bit about, now you've met the person, your business partner, Frankie. You want to open up this hostel. You both jump on board together. Take us a little bit through the process of how you found yourself in Bend, Oregon, as opposed to Portland. Right. And of course, we know Jim Kennett was a big part of it, being a mentor for you. So give us a little bit about how that all went down.
Yeah, that's right. So Jim Kennett had the main hostel in Portland. And, you know, we weren't going to compete against him without talking to him. So we just decided, hey, frankly, we didn't even know what we were doing anyway. I mean, we came from different backgrounds. You know, Frankie came from Washington and medical. I came from California and doing law. So we were a little bit clueless. We just had this vision and we were kind of tired of what we were doing. So we just were kind of rolling the dice a bit. But so we figured it'd be a good start to just invite this old man to have a beer with us. And it was a great idea. He was very generous with his time. He basically said, I'll tell you boys anything you want to know as long as you don't compete with me in Portland. And we said, okay, where do we go? And actually, a side story is he didn't even tell us Bend at first. He told us Seaside because he had owned a hostel in Seaside and he had left to consolidate his empire, so to speak, in Portland. And so we actually negotiated with the woman that he sold the Seaside hostel to, which is out on the beach about an hour from Portland, kind of the quickest beach access from Portland. And those negotiations fell through. And that's when Frank and I are saying, well, okay, so what kind of hostel do we want? You know, Jim was just kind of teeing us up for that because it was already a hostel. But we knew we could just build whatever we wanted anywhere we wanted. So we did a search all over Oregon, and we determined that because we were both into outdoor adventure, and that's the reason people come to Oregon, we would start it in the capital of outdoor adventure, which was Bend.
Amazing.
And also a big brewery town as well, right? Don't have most breweries per like whatever. Isn't that a fact there?
That's right. So yeah. Bunkin' Brew, that's our name. And so we had to build into the beer scene. So I know down in San Diego, pretty good scene too, but in Bend has some of the, per capita, more breweries than anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's And I've always loved the name that you came up with there.
Thanks.
Yeah, super creative and inclusive. And
there's actually a funny story to that too. We were in
go give it.
And I thought this would be the hardest thing because it's going to go into everything, right? And we're setting up. This could take weeks and months. We don't really know. And we sat down, in fact, with the soccer coach or captain of our team and his girlfriend, in a bar in Portland, and we asked them, we said, well, help us out. You know, you got us together. Now, what do you know? We're going to build this guy for all it's worth. So we're like, you're off to a pretty good start. He's like, well, tell me again, what are you going to do? Well, we're like, we're selling beds. He's like, all right. Well, you can't just do bed. That's pretty plain. So what kind of beds? We're like, bunk beds. Or he's like, bunk. Got it. All right. So what else do you do? We're going to sell beer. All right. Well, it can't be bunk and beer. Give me an, you know, whatever. Brew. Okay. Bunk and brew. And we just never found a better name.
Oh, no, it is a great one. It is a fantastic name. Now, we were there and had the opportunity to go and stay at your hostel, which was so cool, after the last conference for the North American Hostel Association, which we'll ask you more about that a bit later in the episode. But as far as going to your hostel, I thought it was so cool. I love that it's out of a historical building. We operate out of a lot of historical buildings. I love the character that comes with it.
Yeah.
But obviously there's also the challenges of, you know, oh, this walkway is going to be changed, or this room upstairs you can't use, and different things like that. You know, so I wanted to ask a bit about those challenges you went through so people can hear them. And then I also wanted to talk about the awesome like shower house that you made, you know, like the washout, which is so cool how you separated that, and how I can see how that can be so efficient for not only like cleaning and things like that, but if you have an historical place, a lot of the things you can't touch or amend. So the bathrooms are, you're kind of stuck with what you got. Yeah. So I love that you built this bathhouse that now that functions adjacently to the historical building, which allows it to be. Then you brought in all these vendors with food trucks and bars and cars. So give us the listeners a bit about that process of going into an historical property and then bringing in those outside vendors and maximizing the property with your, what do you call them, dirt bags?
Yeah.
Your campers.
Dirt bags. Yeah. Got the dirt bag deal for the dirt baggers. Yeah.
Give us a little bit of insight into that, because I really think you guys hit it out of the park as far as like maximizing opportunity within the historical building.
Yeah, we have. I'd like to think so. And you're right. We had all the challenges you mentioned, and we were lucky because we were onto a good thing from the beginning. So Bend didn't have a hostel. It's becoming unaffordable for many people, inflation, all the things. So the hostel was an opportunity to basically serve this market that wasn't served. People just passed through Bend, or they'd do day trips, or they'd camp outside of the city because they didn't have any access. So at first we just threw on Airbnb. We just put in a bunch of thrift store furniture, and we just said, let's test the model, right? It's a cool house. It's right downtown. You can walk everywhere. Let's see what happens. And so we were already profitable in our second month. And that's when we knew we were onto something and that it's worth investing more, you know, because we bootstrapped from the beginning. And so what we found is that a lot of people would come and they would already have a rig that they were sleeping in, an RV, something like that. So they didn't need a bed, but they did need a place to like be close to the city, reconnect, resupply, take a shower, you know, get a beer, that sort of stuff. So we said, well, how do you know, this is our market, but we're not like, we don't have a product for them. So how do we take advantage of this property to do that? And so we already knew that in this historic house, there weren't enough bathrooms. You know, when we tried to join HI originally, we couldn't do it because we didn't meet the metrics that they had for the number of bathrooms and stuff. And we made it work because, again, a lot of these guys, they're pretty easygoing. Their standards are pretty flexible. And frankly, as long as they have a good time, they don't really care. And that was one thing we always delivered. Maybe you know something. We can
nail that.
Because of the experience we deliver, people will overlook a lot of flaws. So, and that was universal in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so we said, okay, what can we do? We need more bathrooms. Let's maybe keep the dirt outside and do something new, because something new, we don't have to deal with all the intricacies of blowing out the house. And we have this, so that's, we built this bathhouse. We said, while we're at it, what else can we do with it? We got a great designer. She said, you can add a sauna. You can add lockers, you can add laundry, you know, all the things that these guys can just have their own little space out there, and kind of the people who want to have the private rooms and kind of, you know, they have, you know, their own kind of thing going, can be a little separate from these guys. And so, it's worked really well. And we basically invented a new category of travel for that area that didn't exist.
Awesome.
And the food trucks, how you tied in, that was really fascinating too. You guys really used the whole property. Right. Talk about how you guys did that.
Yeah. So the next step was, again, we have this land and we're like, how do we use it? And so, you know, everyone enjoys the restaurants and the bars downtown, but we started having people that were staying longer and long periods of time. And so they either don't want, or they get tired, or they just unaffordable, just eat out every night. So we said, well, we have this land, and we had other food cart pods in the city, but none of them were right downtown. So that's when we started building out that infrastructure. And so now we have 3 food carts and 1 bar. And the bar is an old 1970s bread truck that we just
Very cool.
I loved it.
Yeah, we just really focused on character and finding interesting things. And that was kind of a staple to the yard.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I was going to tie into kind of the next step of the operations wise. I'd love to hear, like, you were, you know, you traveled these hostels, you had some wild times in Central America, became a fan of hostels, met up with a buddy, got a hostel going, but you weren't like a hostel manager for years before you took on this vision. What was that? Tell us about kind of opening the hostel and kind of those first days, maybe opening day.
Yeah.
Kind of things you had there.
Well, yeah, that was as wild as my travels were. I mean, that was my only experience anyway, you know? So we were taking cash. We were exchanging services. You know, stay a night for doing the laundry, you know? It was kind of a relief. Gave us a break. I mean, it was pretty wild. I mean, after a couple months of that, we're just, you know, when Frank and I were up all night, you know, just we're doing it all ourselves, you know, going from being a lawyer back to scrubbing toilets and making beds. But it was a lot of fun, and we knew people really appreciated it, and that kept us going. But we knew we couldn't do that forever. So I remember our first little adventure in kind of remote management, and it's definitely not the way we do it now. But we had a woman that had been doing the laundry for several weeks for her stay, and we said, I won't mention her name, but we said, hey, a few of the guests want to go do the snowshoeing thing. Do you want to come? She said, no, I'll stay here. And we said, well, if you're going to stay here, do you mind just running the hostel? I mean, you know, it makes sense. If you can do laundry, you should be able to run a hostel, right? I mean, so anyway, sense or not, we did it. We left for 24 hours. We had a great time snowshoeing with our guests who had also stayed for quite a while. When we came back, everything seemed normal and we were pretty happy about it. We got the keys back. We said, thanks, you can stay another week for free. Well, it turns out one of the guests had left some stuff in her car, and that stuff was gone. So we traced it back to the same woman who had basically taken the keys.
Oh, no.
Taken everything out of this woman's car, stuffed her, you know, credit cards under her own mattress, and we had the police take her out in handcuffs. And that was
First, no,
so we
first
had to
lesson.
Tighten up a little after that. Not much, though.
That is something. Now, we've been doing the past couple of episodes. Some of the operators are in the mode of they live on site. You know, every in the line one of them used was hostel is life and my life is the hostel. And we've been talking with them about how that is a classic, you know, genuine old school way to run a mom and pop hostel, but can really burn you out over time.
Yeah.
As you don't get off site, or it really does consume your life. And I think it was cool to hear from them so that people that are going through that can, you know, have some camaraderie or understand that that is a possibility. But I think you guys portray the exact opposite end of the spectrum, which is great because it shows that there are options and styles of running your hostel and managing it. And I was always very impressed with how you and Frankie started the place. You went in full bore, like you said.
Yeah.
You were doing the hostel is life is a hostel. But then very successfully, you both pulled yourself out and were able to explore and go travel and as if you were still a backpacker. And there was a few times where I was like, these motherfuckers, how are they pulling that off? Like, right. You know, like, I was trying to figure out how I could replicate this. So right. I'd love to hear a bit, and I'm sure others would as well, about how you did that transition. Like, you know, you mentioned your first gamut at it was unsuccessful.
Yeah.
And we've all been there.
Yeah, exactly.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
But how did you then over time get yourselves to the point where you guys are both now running this place and doing different things?
That's right. Yeah, we are. Yeah, Frankie's in Portugal, and I'm a bit of a nomad, but I get to travel a lot. And that's right. So we put in a few years of hard work, and it was a bit of a transition. So maybe, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, we were there all the time. And then one of us would leave for a month and the other would stay. We just kind of back each other up. And then I think after, God, actually, no, even after 1 year, we took a month off together and the hostel didn't burn down. So he said, okay, maybe we take 2 months next time. And then, and eventually we had managers come in, and with sufficient training and systems, we could leave. And so we've been doing this now, I think 7 or 8 years. And I'll tell you this much, like where the hostel is now is not where I thought it would be. At some point we basically handed it over. You know, we have our kind of, you know, these are the limits on the far end of things, and they're pretty far. And then everything within it can be organic based on customer demand. And as long as our managers are keeping their ears open for what customers demand. So although the exact shape of it has changed and morphed, and we've accepted that, one thing we knew for sure is that we couldn't do it forever. And so from the very beginning, I told them we focus first on profitability and second on sustainability, because we needed something that we could deliver to management to be able to operate in their sleep with no training. What I often tell people and my managers is, I need to have a system where if you win the lottery or get hit by a truck, this hostel will continue. You know, just a real visual. Like if you disappear, who's going to know what to do? You know, every time you do something, manager, please think, if I didn't do this, would it get done? What would happen? How would that affect the business? And so instilling kind of that from the beginning, I think, and also, you know, people appreciate having you put their trust in them. And,
sure.
And so I won't say we're gone 100% of the time. We do come back when we do big management changes, but we had one recently where two left and nearly the same time. But as long as we just have one there and one transitioning out, we can do most of it remote now.
That's, you know, that's awesome. And again, a testament to show the wide range that you can attack this hosteling game in, from the point of you're on site all the time, you live there, you're raising your kids there, to, you know, you're running it remotely with systems, with training. But I do love that you're doing it in a way that you're not micromanaging, which that is, again, pat yourself on the back, because most people, when they try to remove themselves, they're remotely micromanaging.
It's their baby. It's hard. I get it. And you talked about you and Bobby having kind of remote into the spectrums. I'm more on that side, and Frankie's more free-willed. And I think the fact that we're both so far to the extreme on this, it kind of forces this middle ground, you know? So, yeah, it's been
like
good.
Magnets pulling it. Yeah, I think that's awesome. And again, a testament to you guys in the ability to do that. Because it shows it is possible, but it does rely a lot on systems and policies, procedures. But love that you give the creative freedom and the empowerment to that person. Here are the boundaries, but inside of that, be creative, be empowered.
And
be
it
trusted.
Is funny. Sometimes I do show up and the hostel can be littered with, like, you know, crystals and, you know, little, you know, flags of this and then I do have to do a little cleaning out. But for the most part, the core of it is built by the people who stay there.
Yeah. You know, and that's a great way to do it organically, genuinely. Now, just to jump over now, you know, the Bunk and Brew, obviously awesome place, but a whole nother venture that you have created, which we're so grateful for. You, Jim, and Frankie really pioneered and spearheaded this formation of a legitimate hostel association in America, for all of North America, actually, called the North America Hostel Association. And we plug it during every episode. And we always ask the person that we're interviewing if they're a member. And then we scold them for a few minutes afterwards
good,
if they're
good.
Not.
Yeah. Scolding. It's one of our favorite methods. So, yeah.
Public shaming. Yeah, public shaming live. Okay. But if you could, you know, tell the people, or we love it so much. And just to give an example, we met at the American Hostel Conference years ago, before
that's right,
the pandemic.
Actually, yeah.
Remember. And then we went to Dublin at the same time afterwards to go to the Hostel World Conference.
Yeah.
And we had a great time together. And I think that's one of the great things that people are missing out on in these conferences. Oh, I don't have the time or to go, or, but it's so worth it with the networking and the relationships that you can create. And especially in an industry where there's just not that many people that know what you're doing. You know, it's very common that the hostel owner and manager, not even their parents know what they're doing, you know, and don't understand it.
Yeah.
So it's so great to have that camaraderie, that network. I love that the WhatsApp chat that you have going on. And it's really, you know, as we've seen a few different people try to pull off the association over the years, I feel like this is the best effort in part because of your legal skills and actually forming successfully it to be, what is it, a 501c7?
Six, yeah.
Six. And, you know,
hey,
just
you had
the
a
potential.
1 in 7 chance.
I, you know, it's not bad. It's not bad. I got the numbers.
I mean,
the
there's not an infinite number. Yeah.
So, but to tell the listeners a bit about what Naha is all about, you know, why was it created, and a little bit about where it's going.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, you give me some credit for being able to do remote management. I only have one hostel. You guys have quite a few. So I imagine it gets harder as you try to scale that model. And maybe someday Frank and I will do that. But I think what I realized is, you know, being that I started hostels a little later in the life, I'm 40 something now. I'm like, you know, how much energy do I have to really build a, you know, a global hostel, whatever, at least in the States, which was kind of one of the ideas we had in the beginning. And I quickly realized, you know, I probably don't have the energy for that. And it's not going to be the easiest thing. So to do it on my own. And so one of the motivations behind Naha is to basically say, well, to your point, a lot of guys, even hostel people, they don't know what they're doing this. So because they're doing it on their own, you're just figuring out, maybe like I did, by going to another country and kind of learning it, you know, that way. So the idea of Naha was, you know, how do we expand this network faster? And how do we, you know, maybe we can do that by having a network. So, you know, me, Jay, I can provide my skills to this organization and they can replicate it, you know, across, you know, many different individuals who want to start a hostel. So I don't have to create 100 if I can teach in one room 100 other individuals how to create theirs, if that makes sense.
True that. True that. I know that makes a lot of sense. And then what about going forward for the Knot? Now that we've got momentum, we got a great conference this past April in Portland, and then we went up to Bend to visit your place. What do you think are some upcoming exciting things going on with Naha that you might be able to share with some of the existing members and potential members out there?
Yeah, well, one of the things that's cool is we started with just kind of a ragtag group of whoever was just willing to like give it a chance and just fly and meet us and have a good time. And everyone did, but no one really knew if it would take off or how realistic it was. But after 100 plus attendees at the last one, we figured we're on to a good thing, right? People pay attendees. So we are trying to get the next one actually down in Mexico. And so, you know, there's some debate about how often we should be doing this. And as long as we have people that are willing, we're going to try. So we're trying to do that. It is good for our representation to kind of bring it between US, Mexico. Maybe the next year we'll do one in Canada. So right now we are adding new board members. So the first board members had put a lot into it, you know, because it was the only ones doing it. Now we're forming committees to kind of spread the burden and that sort of thing. So as we prepare for next year, I think in filling the board, the other thing we also did, by the way, at the last conference, we tried to figure out, well, what do members want?
Yeah.
How do we make an organization that's actually continuing to deliver what people want, and what's it going to cost, and what are people willing to contribute for those benefits? So right now we're actually doing the math and figuring that out. What is, you know, and you'll see some surveys coming out, this and that, about what you want and how to deliver it. And so that's, I guess that's the stage we're in now. Hopefully we'll have something to share next year in Mexico.
About that. Yeah. That it's really exciting to hear about the Mexico location. I think that will be a lot of fun. Although you guys smashed it out of the park in Portland. So definitely some shoes to fill for the next person, because those things are so, they're so hard to pull off and coordinate. So I really always give so much credit to the people who even try, you know, and then when you actually do it well, you know, that's a smashing out of the park. And I'm so glad that you guys took on that task, because the first one has to go well, or there won't be a second one.
We certainly felt that pressure. I mean, again, just over ordering on booze was definitely an intentional element of that. Maybe we can go a little lighter next year. I don't know.
Guys did a great job. I think everyone was generally pleased. Yeah, it was amazing. Really well put together. So Mexico next year, that'll be something.
We encourage all those hostels out there listening that haven't become a member to join up and embrace the community and the movement as we're stronger together than apart. So great things going on at the Naha. Very excited for the upcoming conference. We always love to go and tear it up and have a great time. So you can count on us being there in depth.
That's
and
great.
In numbers.
Okay. Yeah.
Just great having you, man. And so excited to see what you got coming with the Naha. I'm excited to see the new board members and new blood. There's rumors Bob Dyer might be a board member. We're very proud of him there. So
we'll take him if he'll have us. Yeah.
Very exciting. He's hard to pin down, but I think you can get him. But I think the future is very bright for the Naha and also the Bunk and Brew. And thanks so much, Jay, for joining us. And of course, Bob, for co-hosting with me. And we'll be meeting with Frankie Medusa in our upcoming episodes to hear a bit about his story alongside you at Bunk
and
Brew.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear that. We'll see how much the memories have faded.
From